It's a big question. What do you want? Notice they don't answer it, do they? They don't answer it straight away. And it's no wonder. Like all big questions, it's worthy of some thought. But Jesus asks this question a few times in the Gospel, doesn't he? Can you think of any other places where he asks it? He asks it of people who are sick. What do you want? You're standing in front of a leper. Bits of him are falling off. What do you want? It's obvious what I want. But Jesus knows that the obvious thing, the motorcycle, the restored friendships, the obvious thing isn't always the root of the problem. And he wants us to ask the question, what do I really want? What do I really want? So whatever stage you are in your walk with Jesus this morning, it doesn't matter where you're at, I think it's still a good question to ask. And how you answer it might determine your next couple of steps along the way. Sarah and I had a sabbatical this year, and we went and walked the Camino de Santiago. We walked 500 miles across Spain, through a little tiny bit of France, and one of the things that God told me is that life is about walking. It's literally just putting one foot in front of the other. We talk about a walk with Jesus, don't we? This question helps us determine the next couple of steps. What are the steps that perhaps he's asking you to take this morning? Where might that lead you? That's a frightening thought, isn't it, today? And the second question, come and see. Come and see. Have you ever been invited to join something? We've all been invited to join things. You can't leave the supermarket without being asked to join the AA or the RAC or something. But I've had two experiences of being asked to join something. One of them was a local golf club to us. And they asked me to join. And as an incentive, they gave me a week free membership. So for a week, now I need to put this in context, I play roughly 4 games of golf a year. Okay? So Sarah's not a golf widow. And I'm not getting any better, because if you only play 4 times a year, you just play with your natural ability. It's not going to improve much. You'll have one really good shot, and then the next 3 are in the pond. But it doesn't matter, because I enjoy it. And I worked out that because I only play a little bit, I get my money's worth. I can't see the point of paying all that money and only having 55 goes, or 70 goes. So I take over 100. So I'm getting twice as much fun out of my game of golf than somebody who's really good. That's the way I see it. And it gives me much longer to talk to my friends. But they gave me this free membership so that by the end of the week, and I played more golf in that week than I play most years, and I used their gym, didn't do much good, but I did, because I could. But they wanted me to part with some hundreds of pounds to become a member. It was never going to happen. Didn't have the hundreds of pounds anyway. And Sarah wouldn't have let me spend all the time at the gym. Or on the golf course. The other invitation I got was to go and play table tennis. And it was great fun. I haven't played table tennis since I left the Navy, really. And I was surprised how quickly it came back. I had great fun. And totally different invite. This was one of our son's girlfriend's dads. And he just wanted to play table tennis with me for fun. And introduced me to some of his mates who play table tennis on a regular basis. Now the reason I say that is because Jesus' invitation is like both of those ones. You see, the first one was really trying to get me to commit to a deeper, longer relationship with the golf club and part with money. And you see, Jesus' invitation here, come and see, is actually calling the disciples into a commitment of relationship. When you read on, it sounds like everything happens in about 10 minutes, doesn't it? But the likelihood is that they did go with him, but they probably stayed overnight with him. And a whole lot of conversation went on that we don't know about. Be lovely to find out what went on, but we won't. Not this side of glory. But this invitation was, come and see. Come round my house. Come and talk to me. I wonder what they talked about. I wonder what was in that conversation. You see, John the Baptist has been proclaiming Jesus is the Messiah. These are all good Jewish boys. They have learnt the scriptures. They know about Messiah. I bet they had some questions. I wonder what they talked about. But Jesus is calling them and calling us. The first question he asks us is, what do you want? And then the second question is, come. Come and see. Come and see. For them, both of these questions required a decision. For them, it was time for a change. Now we see two examples of change here. The first one is a change of name. For Peter, Simon as was. Do you know what Simon means? It means obedient. So Jesus calls Simon and changes his name from obedient to rock. I can't help thinking that Jesus saw something in obedient Simon that was just a bit solid. And as we read about Peter, the thing we know about Peter is he's not always the first one to get what Jesus means, is he? He's usually the first one to say it out loud and not understand it at all, which is great because I feel comfortable in his presence, because I'm like that. I'm slow to understand. And you see, what happens is Peter gets his name changed in an instant. But his heart takes a bit longer. His heart is for Jesus, lock, stock and barrel, because he's reactionary, isn't he? Peter, who do you say I am? You're the Lord. No, I don't know who he is. You're mistaken, I've never been with him. You must be mad. That's Peter, isn't it? Quick name change, slow heart change. Can you relate to him? How do the questions sit with you this morning? But we've all been through a name change, haven't we? We're called Christian. Do you know that that began as an insult? When I was in the Navy, there were a group of people who joined the Navy and they were called artificers. And an artificer does an apprenticeship. But what happens with artificers is that they get their promotions at fixed intervals as they pass certain exams. Other people have to wait for people to die or leave the Navy. And that's how it works. And so, in the Navy, people would say, oh yeah, he's a TIFF. And that's how the word Christian came about. Yeah, they're Christians. It wasn't a name we chose for ourselves. It's what other people put on us. Do you notice quite often other people decide how a Christian ought to act as well? They decided what we should be called, and they also decide how we should act. And sometimes they're mistaken because they haven't understood what it means to be a little Jesus, a follower of Christ. A change of name. We're called dearly beloved child. Paul writes a whole chunk of his letter to the Ephesians and says, this is what you used to be and this is what you now are. Doesn't he? You used to be this, but now you're this in Jesus. We get a change of name and we need a change of heart. Nathanael's different, isn't he? Nathanael's response to Jesus is, can anything good come from Nazareth? Can anything good? Bats it aside. Joins in with the gentle racism that's part of a joke, but isn't. And what happens when his heart is changed? You are the Son of God. A change of name and a change of heart. And for all of them, it was about finding Jesus. About finding him. I really can't read that. It's rude to turn my back on you, but I'm going to have to because I'm going to need the big words. Okay, verse 44. The first thing Andrew did was find his brother Simon and tell him, we have found the Messiah. That is the Christ. We found him. Years ago, long before my time, there was a chap called Billy Graham who held some big rallies in... this was before my time. It was back in the 50s and the 60s. And when I was in the Navy, he came back in the 80s. And I was a new Christian, and our church on the naval base hired a coach, and we took loads of young sailors up to, we went to Upton Park, which was really quite difficult. I'm a Crystal Palace supporter, and to go to the home of West Ham was just... I had a shower afterwards, so I was okay. But... we went there and then we went to Wembley. And the rules were very simple. You could only have a seat on the coach if you took somebody who wasn't yet a Christian. And I can remember it clearly, and I've known older people, indeed the man who led me to Christ, a chap called Richard Saw. He became a Christian at the 1950s rallies. And he said that the same thing happened back then as was happening when I went, which was, if you gave your life to Jesus, you were told to tell somebody really quickly. Well, the night I came to faith, I went back to my submarine and I told everybody. I told everybody. I made them sick of Jesus. I was really insensitive, naive. But you see, the same thing happens every time someone gets saved. Because you can't help it. You just can't help it. Whatever else you talk about. I used to go and get my hair cut every fortnight. Now you look at me, you know that really wasn't necessary. Even as a young man, I didn't have hair all the way to the front of my head. But I would go, and I wouldn't go to a gentleman's barber's because you get longer in the chair in a hairdresser's than you do in a barber's. So you get to talk more. So I would go and have my hair cut with no other intention than to be able to talk about Jesus. And I'd keep going back to the same hairdressers every fortnight. Now Sarah will tell you I don't need a haircut every fortnight. Never did. We found him. We found him and he makes a difference. And we want you to find him too. That's the heart that beats in us, isn't it? It's the only reason you're here this morning. It's because Wollaston still needs to hear it. Otherwise you'd be home with the Lord. There'd be no job to do. We'd all roll it up and pack up and go home. But it hasn't happened yet. Philip found Nathanael and he said, "We have found the one that Moses wrote about. We found him." The search is off. Now we need to get other people to come and meet him. I love the immediacy. I know it doesn't mean the very first thing he did, because he didn't do it the instant he finished the conversation. He went to bed, he stayed overnight, he got up in the morning. It was the first thing he did the next day. But I love that bit that says, the first thing he did was go and tell his brother. The first thing. Were you like that when you first became a Christian? I want to ask you a question. Don't look at anybody else in the room at this point, because you will blush, and so will they. Are you still like that? Because do you know what I found happens to us? Is we become Christians, and then we get to meet all these other Christians, and they're lovely, and they agree with us. And so we spend loads of time with them, and we lose some of our mates who don't agree with us, because they haven't met Jesus yet. So they still think some of the things that we now think aren't so good are great fun. And I think sometimes it's almost like we can go off the boil. We don't mean to. We didn't take a decision. But we can. And so when we hear those questions this morning, what do you want? Sometimes we might answer that differently today than we did a little bit before. Now that's not sin. That's nothing to beat yourself up about. But a wise person recognises that. A wise person doesn't sit in a room when the heating has gone off, slowly getting colder, and not put a jumper on. A wise person notices the drop in temperature and gets themselves warm again. What might you need to do to warm yourself back up? Worth a thought. I really ought to get through this. I've got 14 pages left. Now I haven't. Calm down. We found him. So what? So what? Well, it's time to decide. We said those two questions require a decision. What do you want? What do you want? And it's time for a change. It's time for a change. Two people, change of heart, change of mind, change of name. Nathanael goes from the flippant, "Can anything good come from Nazareth?" to, "My goodness, he is the Son of God." It's time for a change. And we prayed about our nation. Whether you're an in or an out person, you can't think that it's right the way it is. You can't, can you? Our nation sorely needs the good news of Jesus, doesn't it? Sorely. So now it's over to you. I've done all that. That's really good. I can tick that off. Put that over there. I'm going to have a little sip of water because I'm frothing. Now, because I was nervous about this morning, and I was told that your service doesn't finish until 1:15, there are some of you now whose pulse rates have just really gone up, but now you're awake, so that's good. So what I've done is I've made some little postcards. If you can get your hands on one of these, you might find the questions on the back useful or not. I'm not really worried if you don't. There was no word of knowledge in these. I was just trying to think of some things that might stimulate some thoughts. And I hope that some of what I've said might have done that as well. But what I have done is I've prepared a little video clip, and it's got some music. I think it's a brilliant song, so you can either just shut your eyes and listen to the music, or watch the video clip and enjoy a little bit of Jesus of Nazareth and the music, or you might want to think about the questions on the card. But whatever you do, this little period is over to you. This is for you to seal with God anything you want to hold on to this morning, and to make any decision that you want to make. Sometimes a question like, what are you going to do about it? It's good to answer it, but the temptation, particularly now because you've not had your lunch yet and your blood sugar's low, is to think about it here, and by the time you get home and two people have cut you up on the way, you've forgotten what it was you were going to do. So here's an opportunity to either tear the corner off the postcard to remember, because you can't tie a knot in a bit of card, but whatever you need to do, just make use of this. Lord bless you.
One who is broken, oh, you're broken and hopeless, come find rest in grace. Oh, come me for the saving wonder, calls us daughters.
Always.
We're going to sing a song that is a question. And it's a question that I want you to hear Jesus asking you. And our singing allows us to do that with one another whilst not letting on how we're answering it in our hearts. So if you're able, I invite you to stand with me. And we're going to sing, "Will You Come and Follow Me If I But Call Your Name?" Hear myself singing, and I thought you might too. We're going to use the words of an ancient Christian prayer, and it has some actions that go with it. It's called the grace, and if you can't read or you've forgotten your specs or you don't know the words, it doesn't matter, because what you do is you look around the room and you convey to other people in whatever is culturally appropriate to you, a wink, a smile, a nod, a sort of embarrassed look at my feet sort of thing, whatever you do, that you're blessing them. We've been doing it for 2,000 and a bit years, because we're English, we're Johnny come latelys to this, and we don't always find the eye contact easy. So we'll give it a go, and then if it all goes horribly wrong, we'll have a cup of tea and coffee afterwards, and you can put it right over that. That'll work. But may the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, and the love of God, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with us all, evermore. Amen.